Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I've got filmmaker Joe Baslow with me. Hey, Joe.
Hey.
All right, Joe and I just did his interview, and of course, after every interview on Discover Indie Film, the podcast, we do the four questions, and so this is a four questions episode, so Joe is going to answer favorite films of all time, a film that's underrated, a film that's overrated, and a lesser-known film that people should seek out. And before I have him jump right into his list, just going to mention that Joe's film Grade A is one of my all-time faves, and you can watch it right now. You can go to Amazon Prime Video, any way you access Prime, but seriously, go to Prime on a smart TV, nice, big, fat, juicy, big screen with good color and good sound, and use the Prime app, search for Discover Indie Film, and go ahead and buy all of Season 4, but if you want, start with Episode 10, because Season 4, Episode 10 is Grade A, which is a hilarious, heartwarming comedy, we can even say, but it is a great comedy in this era where we need laughs, so watch Grade A. But if you need inspiration to watch Grade A, Joe's about to tell you all his opinions on films. And hey, if you agree with him, then you'd be like, hey, his favorites are my favorites. I'm definitely going to watch Grade A. So with that premonition, go for it, Joe.
Okay. So we had a limit of three. We're going to start off with the favorite movies. And this is kind of like a hard top three for me. Number one is Blade Runner. Number two is Doctor Strangelove. And number three is Taxi Driver. And the interesting thing about my top three, being a person that usually writes comedic films and set, and then, well, Dr. Strangelove is a comedy, but the other two really aren't. But nonetheless, they are my favorite movies.
And those are, that is a goddamn solid list. Full disclosure, Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb,
yes,
is in fact in my top three. I think it's just, I think it's a flawless, perfect movie.
I'm with you, man. Yeah.
In every way. And of course, Blade Runner and Taxi Driver are flawless in their own ways. I mean, Blade Runner is a freaking lesson in filmmaking. It's just, but the story, in spite of all the technical shit that Ridley Scott does perfectly, it's a great story.
Yeah. And, you know, what a lot of people don't realize is, you know, the book it's based off of, Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, is, I mean, the book is great. It's by Philip K. Dick, who's a big sci-fi writer. But it's like, you know, you remember the owl in the movie, you know, and Harrison Ford's like, is it real or is it not? And it's a very just moment thing in the movie. That's the basis of the entire book. It's like this guy who's like, you know, it's like such a big deal if you have a real animal or a robotic animal. And the tone is all over the place. I mean, the fact that they even made the movie the way they did, I don't know who the hell came up with it or how they, the whole concept of making it like a noir detective story. But I just think like it has the excitement of a detective story, uncovering of clues and all that. And the biggest theme of like, what makes us human? Like what is, you know, What about human beings? Is like, is it our soul? Is it our morality? You know, these bigger things that they weave in so like not shouting at you. It's just in the background. It always just stuck with me. And to be honest, dude, I mean, I think the first time I saw it was like 3 or 4 years ago. So this is not something from like my childhood where I was like, oh, dude, this is the shit. It just had that effect on me. And it just, man, it doesn't get any better for me than Blade Runner.
I got to say two things about Blade Runner now. The first is the comment of, has there also ever been a film that it was more up for grabs? Who's the good guy and who's the bad guy? Who's the hero and who's the villain? Like hero and villain is it's so fascinating that the way it plays out, right? Because
of course,
because Rutger Hauer. And then I just want to share with you that when it came out in theaters, and like, I guess you probably heard that like no one liked Blade Runner when it came out.
No, it was a flop, because, man. Like it was,
because it was, everyone wanted Han Solo to be Han Solo.
Yeah.
I was probably 11 or 12 and everyone loved Star Wars. And then a Harrison Ford movie comes out right after Star Wars. And it's like this, like none of us got it like in my generation. But then of course by high school, college, we like saw it for what it is.
Oh, sure. I mean, dude, you go from Han Solo and Indiana Jones, because Raiders of the Lost Ark did come out before Blade Runner.
Oh, it did, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you're like, dude, like, what? You know, like, what's this dark world and this and that? And it's like, you know, it's like, it's like Tokyo. There's all, you know, it's like this whole, like, lit up, you know, city. And I don't know. It's too bad that it didn't get the play it did, but ultimately all great things will get their, you know, their due at some point. And there's a lot of, I mean, that you don't make a sequel, I don't know, nearly damn 35 years later, you know, if people at that point aren't about the original, you know?
Well, and I saw the original cut when I was a kid. And then when I was in college, they came out with a director's cut of sorts.
Yeah.
And then they came out with like a third cut, because that one that came out when I was in college, which I actually kind of think is the best, then Ridley went back and he did his own like director's cut.
The director's, like, it's also, director's cut.
Yeah. So it's like a film that has like several theatrical cuts. Like, when does that happen? So anyway, no, very cool.
And I have all the versions, and I do like the original version. I do like the narration. I do like, you know, when stories do narrate, if it's done well, you're just kind of, I don't know, you feel more in tune with the character. The same thing in Taxi Driver. There's a lot of narration, you know, but I'm a big Paul Schrader guy. And I think every goddamn movie he's ever done has had, you know, narration from his protagonist in his movies. That's like his thing. But yeah, it is interesting that, I mean, I can't think of another movie. Yeah. Some, like, you know, you used to get like DVDs and it would have like the alternative cut, or like, you know, the alternative ending. It'd be like one scene and like, no, Blade Runner has four different versions.
Yeah, completely. All right. Well, when I hit stop on the recording, I'm going to tell you my Sean Young, Philip K. Dick story. Cause okay. I actually have a very funny story that involves her and wine and Comic-Con.
Okay.
And Philip K. Dick's daughter, of all things. All right, so I will tell you that story when we're off, because this ain't about me telling stories. This is about you answering question number two, which is a film that is underrated.
Okay. So I thought long and hard about this, man, and this is something that, you know, is a little controversial because it's an Academy Award-winning Best Picture film. I feel like Green Book, which won the Best Picture a few years ago, is a very underrated movie that kind of got caught up in, you know, a wrong thing at the wrong, you know, at a certain time, that kind of messed with, you know, what the movie is ultimately about. You know, it was going back kind of to what I said earlier, is that I love movies where you establish what a character is, and by the end of it, they've grown and learned so much on over the journey that they've been on. And I feel like Green Book won Best Picture because it does have that kind of effect. And man, people were really upset about it winning Best Picture. I mean, very, very upset. And I guess I didn't understand it. I was a big fan of it.
Yeah, that movie got shit on pretty badly, I think, for a lot of for what's going on in our culture. And I think people were a little unhappy about the way, because it was written by, I think, that guy's son or grandson that Viggo plays.
Yeah, he was involved in it. Yeah, like,
yeah. People were mad that it was the white guy's point of view.
Oh, yeah.
They're not realizing that, you know, both stories should be told, but, you know, whatever. Yeah, I think there was a lot of, I think he got shit on for non-cinematic reasons.
Yeah, and you hope that, you know, and like we're talking right now, it should only, you know, be about that. But yeah, no, he wrote it. I can't remember which Farrelly brother. You know, it's funny. You know, Farrelly brothers, Dumb and Dumber, Something About Marriage is this beautiful, you know, Academy Award winning film. But my argument was, when that was all coming out, that was not his story. Is that no? It is his story. It's just not being told how, you know, you think it should be told, but that doesn't diminish the fact of how beautiful a story it is. Like, if the, you know, you have a prejudiced guy in the beginning of the film, in a very prejudiced time, who goes on the road in the South to take a black musician down there who's highly regarded, but is still dealing with, especially in the South, the intolerance during the civil rights movement, and him seeing some like that person as a human, but not only as a human, as a friend, and a very good friend, and has that buddy kind of movie feel that, you know, people love. I was just always very resistant to the fact that we should hate on it because it wasn't a story, but it wasn't the story that was being told. It was a story about someone who was intolerant that met this person who became one of his lifelong best friends and changed the trajectory of his life through seeing his struggles, but also his greatness. And when we start losing that, man, there's no point in understanding each other on anything, because if someone can't learn their lesson and grow in a beautiful fashion like that, I mean, then what's the point of what are we doing? We're human beings, you know. We're someone, you know, you can, man, it's just, I could go on forever about it, but it's just not a healthy way to view life, let alone movies.
I feel you. All right. Green Book. So now we get to overrated.
Okay. So this one, I can't tell you, especially at the time, how many late long nights I've had debating for hours with people about this. But I think one of the most overrated movies of all time is Joker with Joaquin Phoenix. I feel like there is no plot. There is no validation for his actions. There's no, it tried to be like a 70s movie where there is like a character and you're experiencing what they're experiencing through them, but it just didn't have the meat to hang off of that. You know, like, they didn't establish him trying to be a stand-up comedian. He went to one open mic night and whatever. Like, it was like these little moments of nothing. Everything felt like there was no substance to it. And then it made $1 billion, and it was like crazy. Like, everyone acted like this was the greatest thing in years, and I felt like I was crazy.
I got your back on that. And I got to tell you, there's been a couple people in the latest run here of, filmmakers doing this podcast, there have been two or three people to name Joker.
Because, really?
I think everyone was just so wowed by it. You know, the Joker is an amazing performance piece, right? Like, Joaquin gives a performance that you could watch a million times and just be amazed by what he's doing. But the film itself is not as good as he is.
Not even close. Yeah.
And that's exactly what you're saying. The story, the this, the that. Honestly, they wasted De Niro. I mean.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Like, they had these things that could have been impactful. But it just came kind of across as, like, lazy. Like, the hardcore, like, random violence in it would carry it to, like, oh, these are crazy times or whatever. Like, when someone is beaten down and fed up with life and how they've been treated, you got to do it better than that. And there has to be a reason for that and a morality or a vulnerability at least shown. At least that's what I believe, like going back to, you know, my own writing. Like, you have to show that side of that. Otherwise, it's just chaos with nothing, you know, else to go on.
Agreed. And I guess, I was going to say something disparaging about Todd Phillips, but he doesn't deserve it. You know, I think the Hangover movies are brilliant.
Yeah, no, listen.
But I think he was out of his element trying to make that film.
No, but here's the thing. It's like, you know, everyone, one of my favorite movies, Taxi Driver, they all try to equate it like, oh, this is like a Taxi Driver movie. It's like, no, it's not. You're talking about a Vietnam War veteran who is in the dark streets of New York, driving late at night, dealing with these different circumstances, you know, that went off his medication, you know, he tried to find love and he was rejected. And it was such a unrealistic display of love. Like, he just expects this woman to fall in love with him. And then he like takes her to this porn theater on their first date. And it's like, what the fuck? Like,
but everyone forgets all that stuff with Cybill Shepherd. Everyone just thinks about the stuff. Yeah. The violence at the end of the film, but most of the film is not violent.
No, not at all. It's just the big third act. Like, dude, these things were building up towards that. Like, his rejection, like, his values are being totally questioned on a daily, all the terrible things he saw and all these things, like, shaped to what he ultimately did. And, you know, yeah, like, he's not, like, quote unquote, like a hero, but he did save this young girl's life, like, as, like, a sort of like, okay, this is like a purpose. This is my purpose, is in this evil world to at least try to spare this young child, you know, or like that. None of that was in the Joker. It was just like, you know, oh shit. Yeah. He's running in the street and he gets his shit kicked out of him by the street gang. And like just terrible things happen without, you know, really seeing like his vulnerability, you know, to that. And that's, I don't know. I feel like that really just suffered in that regard.
Agreed. All right. Well, the final question is something lesser known that people should seek out.
Okay. So, well, first I got to ask you, John, have you seen this movie? Have you seen Hardcore?
I don't think so.
Okay. It's with George C. Scott. It was in 1979, and it was a Paul Schrader movie. It was the second movie he wrote and directed after Blue Collar, with like Harvey Keitel and Richard Pryor. I guess this is my through line, man. It inspired me to write a script with, you know, different circumstances, different situations, but a similar storyline of like a father trying to find his daughter. Basically, George C. Scott is a Midwestern, successful, wealthy businessman, very religious, very like, I mean, shit, man, like over the top religious. And Calvinists are like basically people that believe that they are already guilty in the eye of God. Like they're natural born sinners. And George C. Scott's daughter goes on a like religious, I don't know, like youth trip to California from the Midwest, which is obviously a culture shock. But then she goes missing. And the cops aren't doing shit. He hires this private investigator who isn't doing shit. And then he has to go out there and find her for his own sake and his own responsibility. And the culture shock of it's this seedy porn shop, independently made, you know, porn, you know, film movies. Like it's that kind of world that this holy man is ingratiating himself into to find his daughter. And man, dude, it is so good. Like, it, you know, Paul Schrader is one of my favorite writers of all time. I mean, he's written some of the greatest screenplays of all, you know, Raging Bull, Taxi Driver, he did American Gigolo, he's done so many Scorsese movies. Like, dude, like, he is just so rock solid. I love The Yakuza. That was his first screenplay. But
I love his film, considering that film you are so hardcore mentions porn, I love Autofocus.
Yeah, dude, Autofocus. Like, dude, you
like, poor, there's porn in there too.
Yeah,
well, Schrader, yeah, deals with the dark. Yeah, Schrader does
the dark side of humanity, man. Yeah. And it's like, you know, for this kind of character to that believe so much in what he believes in, but he gives that away to try to find his daughter and really infiltrate this world that is so not only foreign to him, but against his entire being. There is, man, like, it just doesn't get better than that, man. Like, doing what is necessary to, even if it's against everything you fucking believe in, to get somewhere, to take care of, find someone that you love. I mean, that's what I hope that we get back to, man, is, like I said, like, learning to exist outside of your own boundaries, your own political affiliations, your own worldviews, your own this, your own that. Because that's how you learn, and that's how you grow, and that's how you learn to respect yourself, and more importantly, respect others, and become a better, well-rounded person. So, like, I saw that movie over the pandemic for the first time, and, man, I cannot believe more people have not seen this movie.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, I got to see it. I just looked it up on IMDb. It was his second film he ever directed.
Yeah. Yeah. And George C. Scott gave him shit, man. Like, I read all about it. Like, dude, this guy, he's General Patton, man. The guy's nuts. You know what I mean? Like, holy shit.
George C. Scott was intense, and, like, he was one of those guys who never attended an Oscar ceremony, right? He refused to go. He said, "I don't do this for awards. I don't do this for acknowledgement." Again, you know, he was the guy who wouldn't go. Like,
it freaked people out, man. Like, he was just that intense. I love that intensity. And, you know, like you said, going back to Dr. Strangelove, he is that gum chewing, bumbly, goofy ass, like, general, like, just so great.
I mean, he showed unbelievable humor in that part.
Yeah.
Unbelievable humor.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Remarkable.
Yeah.
God damn, I got to watch that again soon.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to wrap it up so that I can stop recording and tell you my Sean Young story. But anyway, okay. My Blade Runner story.
Yeah.
But, and anyone who wants to hear it, you got to deal with me. So anyway, you just heard Joe Basla's Discovery Indie Film 4 Questions Answers. Awesome list. Remind me of some wonderful movies that I want to watch again. And now I got to see Hardcore. And actually, there was something else on your list I'm going to have to, like, revisit, because I hadn't seen it. If you want to see Joe's film, Grade A, it's this hilarious 30-minute short. Go to Amazon Prime Video, search for Discover Indie Film. It's season 4, episode 10. I can promise you, you can enjoy it. Give that TV series 5 stars on Amazon.com. Just do it. Be nice. And give this podcast 5 stars. You know, I actually can't even tell you. Yes, I'm lazy. I have not looked on iTunes to see what the reviews are. But you know what? Write a nice review. Give it 5 stars. Be kind. And if you want to learn more about this podcast and the TV series that was born from it, go to discoveryindiefilm.com. And if you're going to social media, it's at DIFWINS. And the reason I met Joe was because he submitted Grade A to the Sherman Oaks Film Festival, where it pulled in some awards and was a great part of the festival in 2020. Sherman Oaks Film Festival is every November. You can learn about it at ShermanOaksFF.com, and it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. And I got to tell y'all, like, there are some amazing films that we're going to show next month. I happen to be steeped in it, but If you've never seen a sock puppet play the stand-up bass in an orchestra, you haven't lived. All right. And Sherman Oaks Film Festival has a sister festival that's every June. That's Film Invasion Los Angeles. And you can learn about it if you go to filminvasionla.com. And on social media, it's at Film Invasion LA. I'm going to thank Joe Basso once again for doing this.
Jeff, thank you, buddy. This has been just a blast, man. Thank you so much.
It's been fun for me. And again, I enjoyed your list. Actually, hardcore is the only one I got to hit. All right, I got to hit hardcore. Yes. And then I'm going to watch Strangelove again and again and again. Because I don't know. I haven't forced the kid to watch Strangelove yet. I'm probably afraid that if she gets bored, I'll get too upset. She only likes horror movies. What can I say? All right. Well, thank you again, Joe. And thank you, everyone, for listening.